This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. There's nothing like sunny, warm spring days. Well, we might see some yet, to get homeowners fired up about home improvement projects. Residential renovation is a $300 billion industry in the U.S., and rather than hire a general contractor to coordinate or complete the work, statistics show that about 35% of Americans bypass the contractor and hire tradesmen themselves, and 67% of homeowners report that they will do some of the work themselves when they remodel. It's Home Improvement Day on the program, and we welcome back Bill McAnally, Director of the Industrial Technology Program at Iowa Central Community College. If you have home repair on your mind, call us this hour. Bill is here to help. From roofs to basements to patios, from kitchen floors to unwelcome critters, we'll have some advice. Bill McAnally is the guest this hour on Talk of Iowa. First, news from Iowa Public Radio and NPR. And welcome to Talk of Iowa for this Thursday. I'm Dennis Reese. It's Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa with Bill McAnally, Director of the Industrial Technology Program at Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge. And it is a great pleasure to finally get a chance to meet Bill. He is in our Iowa Public Radio studio in Iowa City. Good morning, Bill.
Hey, good morning, Dennis. Nice to see you, too.
All this time, I've heard you on the air for years. You used to talk to Catherine Perkins and then Greg Shanley, and then I've been talking to you for all these months, and finally, you're here in the flesh.
And then you stick me into a separate room. How's that supposed to make me feel?
Well, you're more good looking than I thought you would be. You're a good looking guy.
Thank you. You too.
Well, we'll get serious.
Speaking
here in
of critters,
it is really great to have you here in person.
Yeah, this is great.
And it is springtime. Doesn't feel much like spring, but it looks like the forecast will give us some nice sunny weather here for the next few days. And I think people will be in remodeling and renovation frenzy, ordering materials, checking with contractors, dreaming about projects they can't afford.
We're in the boat, same boat.
Yeah, we are. But it is an exciting time to think about getting your hands on those tools. And if you have no skills like me, getting somebody to do that for you
is the right thing to do.
Yeah, that's right. I can change a light bulb.
That's one of my favorite things, because I still think the best light fixture is just a little pigtail hanging down from the ceiling. It's a lot cheaper. It's a lot easier to get to the bulb.
That's right.
But yeah, things are really starting to pick up. I think in Iowa, you go down the road and it seems like we got a jump this year. You know, it warmed up a little quicker. Guys are out, doing some excavations. I think, in fact, at Iowa Central, we're doing some more projects, taking advantage of this warm weather, and it gets into your system, gets into your blood, and it was nice to hear those numbers of people that want to really do things on their own, because a lot of these things they can, but there's always a point where you really should check with some professionals. There's mm-hmm. If you feel comfortable doing some things, then by all means go ahead. But if you're wary at all, it's a good thing to bring in. If you don't bring in a contractor, do it at least maybe enlist a friend or that is a contractor to, maybe guide you as you're going along. Do a lot of research.
Really?
I mean, the internet has so many things. I've even sent students to YouTube. There's so many things even on YouTube where, they'll show you how to do a complete project without the editing like you see on TV. When they make a mistake on TV, they edit it. Well, on YouTube, a lot of times they like to show those things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. it is tough to pick a contractor, though. Angie's List is now available in parts of Iowa, I know, but it's not really all that complete so far in the Cedar Rapids and Des Moines areas. But how do you go about picking a contractor?
A lot of times it's best, especially in Iowa, we're still a lot of word of mouth. We're very rural yet, is to check with friends that have had some work done. Get with maybe your local lumber yard, your local materials supplier, your local maybe carpet, flooring providers. They know who the good contractors are because they've had to, deal with them. A lot of times, it's funny, you can find out who a really good builder is from a painter or a flooring person because they have to deal with kind of a finished product, and they know how organized a contractor can be if they're capable of staying on budget, if they're friendly with the homeowners, if they're thinking of the homeowners. They're kind of a hidden resource, I think, that we don't sometimes tap into.
We don't have a lot of shady contractors in a rural state like Iowa.
Oh, no, not Iowa. No, it's probably one or two.
Really?
The whole state.
Is that right? Is that your true belief?
No.
No, you're there, not.
No.
There's
quite a few. You know, it's like anything. There's always somebody out there that they're in it just to make the dollars, and they're not concerned about the end product or the customer. I think we're lucky in Iowa. I think the percentage of shady contractors is probably a lot less here in the Midwest states. You know, we still have that recognized throughout the country, that Midwestern work ethic. And I think our morals in Iowa, maybe I'm just dreaming, but I think our morals and ethics in Iowa are a lot better than a lot of other states. So the odds of you finding someone that's not going to treat you right are less here.
Well, what about guys that you are head of a community college program that teaches carpentry, building skills, and you graduate students from this? They should know what they're doing. But, you know, I've run into people, contractors, over the years that I get the impression that they just never went to a trade school, and they really don't know what they're doing. So I'm trying to distinguish between the shady contractors or tradesmen and the incompetent ones.
There's a lot of incompetent ones out there. You know, luckily with Iowa, it's good that somebody would go to school for training, but there are a lot of builders out there that were trained by their grandfathers, their fathers, that are excellent contractors, that, you know, they're very good. And they keep on top of things. You know, they're reading periodicals, they do research. When a student would come to a school, you only get, like, say, in carpentry, you only get a year with them. You get 11 months, so you're just exposing them to just snippets. You can't get really, really in depth with things because you only have that 11 months. But at least, hopefully, at that 11 months, you know, you've got a graduate that understands that the main goal is to make the customer happy, to produce an excellent product. You know, be something you'd be proud of. We used to say, you know, if you're not building it to you know, that your grandma would be happy with it. If your grandma's not happy with it, then you're not doing something right. You know. We kind of have that old world craftsmanship a little bit yet in Iowa, where skills are passed down. It's just when we get into some of these newer products and newer methods, that's where we sometimes have a slight glitch, because there's so many things coming on the market that if you aren't keeping up with them, you can get caught. And if you don't know how to use certain products with other products, you know, how the marriage of two different pieces of materials would go together correctly, you're asking for real troubles, because we have so many man-made products now, and we're trying to blend them with natural products, and a lot of times they're not made to go together. And so that's where education really comes into play.
Right. 866-780-9100. Bill McAnally, our home improvement guy here for the hour on Talk of Iowa. We're live this hour. And, Bill, we might as well take a call from John in Corning. Good morning, John.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
How are you?
Good. Bill, I got a question. I'm finishing a porch. It was enclosed, but we're going to insulate and enclose and side the outside. But it's just got a crawl space underneath, and I'm wondering, with a dirt floor, and I'm wondering what I should use to insulate that floor. First of all, and then second of all, do I have to worry once I've got that done? Do I have to worry about getting access? In other words, if we finish the floor, do we need to leave like a trap door?
Well, the best way, you know, that porch, is it going to be heated?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, what you want to do is go down the crawl space and level the floor that's there, and put down like a 6 mil poly, use the black poly. It holds up a little bit better in case it's left outside, you know, while you're working on it. But lay it over the floors, and then put 2 inches of foam over that, 2 inches of like extruded polystyrene, which would be like, you know, blue board, you know, pink formular, any of the colored foams.
Okay.
And then do the same thing on the sides.
Okay.
And then run those all the way up, even between the floor joists, all the way up to the floor itself.
Right.
and then you'll have an insulated space. Now, do you have at least 18 inches or so under there to crawl around?
Yeah. Now, the problem is going to be that it is enclosed on two sides by the house itself, and then two sides it has a brick foundation with vents, so I'm not going to be able to get in any solid board.
Oh, okay. Well, that's okay. I mean, you could still put in the small, you know, you can put them in 16-inch wide pieces, and usually the vents are about that wide, but be sure and cover the vents up, unless you're in a flood zone.
No, we're not.
Yeah, get rid of the vents. That's what we always used to do. That's kind of 60s technology, is to vent your
right.
crawl spaces. Now you want to, you know, kind of treat it just like you would a basement.
Okay. Here, the thought that I had occurred to me, and tell me if this is right or wrong, is to put down the plastic barrier, vapor barrier.
Yep.
Run it up to the sides and then blow in cellulose.
Well, the only downside with cellulose in that application is if you ever do get moisture in there,
yeah.
the foam's not going to take on any moisture, and if there's ever a chance that water will get in there, that just turns into kind of bus bedding.
Right.
Great for night crawlers, but it's boy, when it gets wet, it just gets this terrible stench to it too.
What do you think about the I see the advertisements for the spray in foam.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be good. You know, if you're looking at doing it yourself, I'd do the boards. If you're going to hire it done, and you know, it's going to be a little more money, of course, with the
sure.
with the spray. But there, you'd want to use a closed cell foam.
Right.
Yep. That's a good option.
Any thought about just continuing to keep sort of a trap door so that we can access it if we have to, or
yes.
once we get it done, you think we can just seal it up?
No, I always like having access. You never know what's going to happen, and you know, it always gives you a chance if you ever want to run some wires or. Or if
right.
you do have to inspect, and it's nice to, you know, God forbid you ever had a fire, it's nice that you can get access to that area.
Okay,
John,
okay.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks, John.
Before we take a break, let me at least start with an email question here for you, Bill. This is from Jessica. We have recently acquired a 100-year-old building that was flooded and has sat empty for the last 2 years that has cast iron sewage pipes that are cracking and possibly rusting through in spots. When we looked at the building before the flood, this was not a problem. Is this because the building sat empty and cold, or because it is old? Should we try to replace them ourselves?
I would replace that cast iron plumbing. Yeah, by all
yeah.
means. It could have been both. A lot of times what could have happened is there could have been a plug in the line, and then the water got into it and froze, you know. I've seen it where the water in cast iron, if there's a plug in the line, it can, you know, go two stories tall, and it'll crack. And once it's cracked, it's just not worth salvaging it. And it's awful heavy, and it's yeah. very sharp, and I would have a plumber do that,
okay.
unless you know you can safely do it.
Okay, great. Email is talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our phone is 866-780-9100. Bill McAnally, Iowa Central Community College, and Fort Dodge. Home Improvement Day on Talk of Iowa continues in a minute. Talk of Iowa continues. Home Improvement Day. I'm Dennis Reese with Bill McAnally from Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge, and he is in our Iowa Public Radio Iowa City studio on this cloudy Thursday morning. Going to see some sunshine, though, this afternoon. Looking forward to that. It's been a while.
Yes.
Let's go to a call from Larry in Alcater. Good morning, Larry. You're on the program.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
We're looking at doing some roofing on our house, looking at the options of materials. We've thought about the deck brush shingles,
mm-hmm.
the steel concealed fastener,
yep.
Steel roofing, or even asphalt. The dilemma, I guess, is how tough is it to get a good seal on the joints and the valleys and around chimneys and that with the steel? You know, they say it's supposed to be good for 40 or 50 years, but if you got the leaks in the joints, it doesn't
yeah.
matter.
I don't think it's any harder than, you know, if you're going to use asphalt. It's just that, you know, you have to have somebody that's really competent on fitting those pieces, especially around, you know, especially a brick chimney, because, you know, they do move and they take on moisture. Those are always really tough to seal. If you're going to keep that, and now would be the time to maybe thinking about get rid of it if you do have it. But, you know, I've been really happy with the Decra. shingles. I think all of the flashing systems that comes with it are very well engineered, and when they're put in correctly, I don't think there's an issue. The only downside with that one is, you know, if you have a shallow pitched roof, you don't have like a 312 pitch roof, do you?
Well, yeah, we do. It's a fairly flat, several different pitches, but yeah, one is flat like a 312.
Okay, because when we were putting it on, I was reading, and actually I do read the directions once in a while, that it pretty much said that if it's a 312 pitch, it's more of a decorative. You know, I thought, what do you mean by decorative? It's exactly what I thought it was. You know, you're going to have to put ice and water shield underneath it, and you're pretty much relying on that to get rid of the water. I would check unless they've changed it since I put it on last. But that's one thing. At a 412 pitch, you're okay. At a 312 pitch, which is very shallow pitch, they are more decorative than waterproofing.
What about the concealed fastener steel roofing? Will it work on 312?
It will if it's properly installed again. Yeah, that I think you'd be better off with that one on that 312. But there again, you know, you've got to have somebody that's really competent on the flashings, because on the shallower pitch, that's where that really comes into play. If you know, there's caulkings that are involved, and of course, you know, in Iowa, caulking is going to last, you know, 30, 40 years. So everything is just going to have to be done perfect when it meets a shallower pitch, especially if there's issues with a large amount of water at any certain time.
So, well, and the cost of steel roofing is probably double asphalt.
Maybe three quarter. Times, yeah.
Is it worth it?
I think it is, because especially with hail. And the issues with, you know, I mean, how many times have we really had even a 25-year shingle go 25 years,
right,
without hail? Yeah. That's a big thing to me. I just don't want anybody to have to go up there again.
Right. So, okay.
Thanks. And thanks, Larry, for the call. And people have been having a terrible time with the Certainty shingles bill that have been not lasting more than about 8 or 10 years or
well,
something.
Well, you know, it kind of depends. Yeah, Certainty had some problems, and there's a class action lawsuit against Certainty. And, you know, I've heard people getting a substantial amount of money, some not too much. And I don't know if the deadline's passed or not. I'm trying to remember if it was May 1st or not. But I would just do a Google search on that just look in Certainty shingle failures. And, you know, you're going to have a sample. You're going to have to take a lot of pictures. It's good if you have first of all, you have to make sure they were Certainty. You know, you're going to have to remember when you bought them, who installed them. If you have a shingle that you've held off to the side, maybe one sitting in the attic or something laying down in the basement, send that along with one on the roof. I helped some people in a town close to Fort Dodge send some shingles in, and it said send in a complete shingle. The biggest piece I could get was about 3 inches, because it was just crumbling in my hands, and I could see the felt paper.
Were they just badly manufactured, brittle maybe, or something?
Well, you know, yeah. that's a point for the lawyers to figure out. But okay. They're obviously were not, you know, they weren't making it.
Okay, right.
When it feels like a saltine cracker, there's something wrong.
Oh, gosh. Jeff is an email from Illinois. In our basement, the sump pump is not the first place water comes up, even though it does have a hole in the bottom. And so the water comes up through a crack in the floor, and then fills that room's floor with water before running to the sump pump. I was thinking about putting a shallow and narrow trench to go from the crack to the sump pump, which is about 20 feet. Wondering about a sledgehammer or masonry chisels. What's the best way to go?
Oh, boy. Well, you know, it's really funny that happens, because we've seen that. You might have two sump pumps in your basement, and the water's coming up somewhere else. And a lot of it is because, you know, back in the 60s and 70s, we just – maybe put down a little bit of sand to level it out, but that about it. Otherwise, it was even clay or soil, and we pour our basement floor. So the water, to get to that sump pump, has to go through the soil rather than now we put, you know, gravel underneath the basement floor so that the water can come into the gravel and go to the sump pump, and it's gone. So, you know, the option is you can put a sump pit over where the water is coming, if at all possible, or near, try to catch the water. you know, coming through the ground there, relieve that pressure, or you know, take a saw with a masonry blade, like a diamond blade. I mean, if you want, it's very dusty, it's messy. You can just cut a couple cuts in the floor and bust that out, and you know, like put a trench in there. The other way is sometimes just put a gutter around the edges of your basement wall. There are a lot of products. Thorobond product is something you put on the concrete, and you can pour new concrete onto this bonding agent. So you build a little curb that sticks to the old floor and kind of make the water go around the outside of the foundation. Or you can, you know, you can get with, you know, look in the Yellow Pages or try to find some people that, you know, do basement repairs and waterproofing systems.
Sometimes I think it would be easier just to live in a cave or something. You know?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, it would.
Houses are complicated.
Yes,
right?
They are. You know, or you know, a friend had a good idea. Let's just go ahead and take a grain bin and spray the inside of it with foam and frame it up. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, that isn't a bad idea.
Really, I hadn't thought of that.
You know,
let's go to Dean in Dubuque. Good morning, Dean.
Good morning. The popularity of using Amish carpenters is becoming more popular. I just wondered, what's your take on using Amish to do construction work, like building stairs, et cetera?
Oh, well, you know, there's the old world craftsmanship coming through that I think a lot of us have lost, you know, because we're looking at speed, we're looking at production. Some of the stairs, the nice thing is when you get into stairs and handrails and things like that, that old world craftsmanship can come through, and it almost like the stairs becomes a piece of furniture. That I wish we could get back to that, but you know, in today's economy, it's hard to compete. But I can't say anything but good about the craftsmanship that I've seen. I had some help me build a buggy one year, and in one day I learned, I swear, a year's worth of knowledge.
Wow.
What about price comparisons? Are they reasonable?
I don't know. I've never they're very reasonable when they help me on my buggy, but as far as construction, I don't know. You'd have to just get some prices, and you know, it may take longer. But there again, you know, I think a lot of that craftsmanship shows through.
Okay, yeah. Thanks, Dean. We want to get another call in before the break. Let's go next to Al in Fairfield. Good morning, Al.
Hi. Here's my question. I've got just a recently built garage, and I've got some gaps from the siding and the plate that runs next to the siding at the very bottom. I'm thinking, well, gee, this is like mouse invitation. And I was just wondering what kind of stuff I could block that up with that would prevent the mice from coming in.
Some have taken small hardware cloth, and you know, you can cut it into 2-foot chunks and then fold it. And then, is there room enough so you can slip that underneath?
Should be able to get something like that in there. Hardware cloth.
Yeah. You know, like or screening. You know, if you have a lot of those, I got to think of the radio friendly term for those. Stinking bugs.
right.
But, you know, if you get with a finer screen, that'll help keep them out, too, because that's a perfect place for them to hide.
Is there any hope for a second question later on after the break?
If you want to hold on, okay. We can get back to you after the break, which is be about 5 minutes duration for the Environment Report. And then we will be back with Bill McAnally, Iowa Central Community College, Home Improvement Day, Talk of Iowa. 866-780-9100 is our phone line. Talk of Iowa continues on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Dennis Reese with Bill McAnally. It's Home Improvement Day on the program, and we want to go back to a caller who has been waiting to ask a second question. We'll see if Al is still there from Fairfield. Al?
I'm there.
All right. Go ahead.
Or here. In any case, I've got a garage that was just built, and I had a friend of mine who happens to be a contractor came in and went, holy mackerel, the rafters aren't what they should be. And so I'm sort of puzzled in terms of how really it should look. Right now there's some spans across the gable ends, and there's the I'm not sure what the rafters actually are, but there's not purlins, but there's very little substance to the whole project, you know. And the guy who came in said it's going to sag. So I'm trying to figure out, is there some good sources for pictures?
Yeah, there is. Actually, there's. Are they trusses or are they just rafters?
Rafters. Yeah, he built rafters because he said he was sort of in a hurry and he wanted to get something up there.
Well, that's good for you.
I figured, well, he's this guy that's built gazillion houses, so he should know what he's doing. He was in a hurry because he didn't want to wait for the truss company to send the trusses.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's some good pictures. If you trying to think if it was – it used to be called Midwest Plan Service. They on the internet, I found some plans of buildings and barns all the way back to the 1800s, and they show material lists and diagrams. But if you just Google, I would just put in garage rafter construction.
Oh, okay.
But if they're probably 2x6s, probably right. 2 foot on center, aren't they?
24. Yep.
Okay. You know, you can beef it up, but is it 24 feet wide?
28.
28 feet wide?
Yeah,
you're gonna have to put in some more bracing. I'm just guessing, but I would look at that design because you can kind of turn those into kind of a rafter if you want to beef them up. What you can do is, I don't know what the pitch is on the garage.
612.
Well, you could put some rafters that start at the wall directly below the 612s and put them at 312. And what they would do is they would meet directly below where the top ones meet, and you would be making more of a kind of a web truss.
Sort of below the ridge board?
It would be below the rafters that are there.
Huh.
So you're making kind of you can make a truss with what you have there already.
And otherwise, is there the fear of saggy roof?
It could be. That's pretty wide span. But yeah, I would look at that, and you could also just if you Google web truss design, and normally you take the pitch of the top cord and cut that in half to a 312, and then you can the design will actually show you how to tie the two together, and that would keep it from spreading.
Yeah.
Okay.
Appreciate it very much.
Yep. And Lonnie Gamble's a good in the Fairfield area from the university there. He's a good resource.
Thank you very much.
Yep,
thanks for the call from Fairfield, Al. Appreciate it. 866-780-9100. We have some open lines, so we'll get you on the air quickly if you call in now. 866-780-9100. Home Improvement Day, Bill McAnally. This might be a chance for Bill for you to mention the conference coming up soon in Hiawatha in the Cedar Rapids area, the Center on Sustainable Communities, presenting a free evening session, how to find the right contractor for a new construction and remodeling projects. A lot of this has to do with green building contractors.
Right. Linda Schimmel, an architect, City of West Des Moines, will be there with me. It is free, and it should be a lot of fun. So it'd be nice to have some people come out and have some questions.
Okay, so this is Thursday, May 27th, 6 o'clock p.m. at the Hiawatha Public Library, 150 West Williams Street, Wilman Street in Hiawatha. Here's an email from Carol. Carol with a K in this case, in case you're wondering. or not. I need to look into replacing my furnace, and I plan to add central air conditioning at the same time, but I have a problem to solve first. My gas meter and line are under my front window and next to the front door. The gas people told me the time to move it is when I replace my furnace. How do I get this done? Would the furnace dealer arrange to do this for us? Does a plumber have to do it? How big a job is this for the gas company? How expensive is it? She has about at least five more questions.
Well, that's
there,
good. Those are good questions. The best thing to do is to have your furnace person just let them do all the coordination for you. They're used to dealing with the plumber. They're used to dealing with utility company. If they aren't, then the plumber is. To take the headaches out of it and let them do it. Normally it depends. Some of the utility companies will do it for a very small minimal fee because they want to get that. That doesn't sound like a good place to have the meter anyway. It may be so much a foot. It depends on how far they're trenching, and there's some other incidental costs. But your HVAC contractor should be able to compile all those costs and give you a timeline, because especially with utility companies, you've got to book them out there sometimes a few weeks to move things. So you want to get on that right now. But I wouldn't. If I were you, I would just let the contractor handle all those headaches for you. That's why we hire contractors.
Okay. Let's go to Robert in Davenport. Robert, you're on Talk of Iowa.
Hi. I'm also calling about a crawl space. I put on, about 10 years ago, I put on a 500-square-foot addition, and it has a crawl space, about a 4-foot crawl space underneath it. With a dirt floor, they put plastic, heavy plastic, over the dirt floor.
Okay.
And I've got a area, I can a trap door that I can go down into it.
Okay.
But it's, the insulation is starting to fall down. It seems to be getting sort of wettish and moldy-ish.
Yeah.
And I have some vents in there that I open and close.
Ooh.
That's a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, do the vents from outside?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. You know, we want to close those out. The insulation you're talking about, is that up between the floor joists?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Let's because you are, even with that plastic there, a lot of times the moisture will come in, let's say, through those vents, because if we draw in some real warm, humid air from outside in the summer, and then you might be air conditioning. And then there's some cooler surfaces. You get a little condensation. You know,
I don't use air conditioning in that addition. But.
Okay, you still you're getting that. You're getting some of that humid air in there, where there may be a crawl space sometimes a little cooler. So you may get that. It's kind of that basement smell that a lot of Iowans are used to.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. Everybody,
I'm used to that.
Yeah.
The house is like 100 years old.
Oh, you know what I'm talking about.
Has a very deep basement. And that's why I was worried about putting a basement in there, because it would have been lower than the other part of the basement.
Sure.
Anyway.
I would get a, if it was me, I'd get a Tyvek suit, those white suits, and a respirator, face mask, and take that insulation down up from between the floor joists, and then put 2 inches of foam across the floor and 2 inches of foam up the sides, and then put 2 inches of foam between the floor joists, where the floor joists sit over the foundation wall. So you're putting like a vertical piece of 2-inch foam, so you're insulating that band joist, the rim joist area. But that will really eliminate a lot of issues that you have right now. Leave the plastic that's there, unless the floor is really on a level, because you want this to be level. And as long as that 2-inch foam's down, it'll really make a nice, you're going to really notice it on the floor up above. It's going to be warmer than what it's ever been.
Put 2 inches of
foam over the plastic on the floor.
Oh, put foam on the floor?
There you go. Yep.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And then how about, and take all the insulation down?
I would, because you may have, the only reason I would take it down is because you may have some moisture in there.
Uh-huh, and then I'm sorry, I got to repeat it.
No, that's fine.
And then put 2 inches of foam in between the floor joist?
Yeah, on the end, where the floor joist sits over on the foundation, mm-hmm. on the walls. Yeah, that space in between the floor joists, if you, let's say you're on your knees in the crawl space, you're looking towards the foundation wall, you put your head up between the floor joists, you're looking right at the band joist, that board that holds the floor joist straight up and down.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you would put the foam. You'd put a chunk of 2-inch foam to fit in between there.
How about on the underside of the floor?
No.
Should I just leave that open?
Just leave that just like it would look in a regular basement.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Well, that doesn't sound so hard.
No.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Thanks. Yeah.
Line's open.
Should I leave the vents closed all
yes.
the time?
Yes. Yeah. I'd cover them up with the foam.
So that was a mistake putting those in there.
No, let's not say that.
Was that old technology?
Yeah, let's just say that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You grabbed the wrong magazine.
The idea to open them and close them—that was like an old idea.
Yeah, that was the old days.
Old
yep.
idea. Okay, thank you.
Yep, thanks.
866-780-9100. Gosh, this is a day for emails, which tests my ability to read out loud here. Russ Let me make sure this is...
With an R?
Yeah, with an R. Russ says, I have a house built in 1916, and the basement is built with clay tiles and bricks. Would like to replace, but would I ever be able to get the cost of basement replacement out of the house? It's only a two-bedroom bungalow. How about repair? It's dry most of the time, and at the worst, it is damp.
It'd really be tough to get your money back. If it's a bungalow, you've got something going for you there because, you know, that particular design's well-liked. You could get with a local realtor, and they could do a cost analysis on it for you. And, you know, because you can get a couple estimates on replacing the basement or what a lot of people are doing with that particular type of basement, because they're usually structurally pretty good, is to spray foam the foundation itself and then frame the inside and finish it off. You know, after you've taken care of any water issues, you'd have to have a contractor come in and take a look at that. Or, you know, the other option is just leave it alone. Because it really is hard on a house that old to get your money back. You're really looking at a small percentage of people that would go for it. It's kind of like, you know, an underground home. It's a very good idea, but, you know, I don't know of any banker right now that would loan you the money on it or how it would appraise, because there's such a small percentage of people that would want to purchase that particular product. So you've really got to pencil it out on a house that old. You know, it may be $25,000 to $40,000 to put a new foundation in. Are you going to get it out? I don't know. It just depends on where your house is at.
All right. Julie has a comment about Amish workmen. She says, we had a group of Amish men build our 50-by-72 pole building, and we couldn't be happier with the construction. The final bill came in 25% less than conventional builders. The building is held up against a tornado that blew apart our first home. The Amish men came to our home after the tornado hit to fix the minor repairs, et cetera. And she says they were just exceptionally nice guys, too. So,
Yeah. I loved working with them when we were working on my buggy.
Yeah.
I learned a lot.
Thanks, Julie. 25% less.
That's a pretty good chunk of money there.
Yeah. Let's go to Sharon. Sharon is calling from Johnston. Good morning.
Good morning. I was wondering if Bill could schedule a meeting of green contractors in our metro area here, or Johnston, or, you know, Des Moines area sometime this summer.
Sounds
like it'd be really great to, and I bet a lot of people would go.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lene Henson runs the Center on Sustainable Communities. Hopefully she's listening today. If not, I'll give her a call this afternoon and see if they can get one lined up, because these are paid for by a grant from the Department of Economic Development.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yes, yes.
And make sure it's published in the paper or somewhere.
Okay.
So we can all know that.
Okay.
Okay.
You bet. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Sharon. Let's go to Alicia, who's calling from Iowa City. Good morning, Alicia.
Good morning. Hi, I have a house that was built in 1946, and the owners replaced the original pedestal sink with a vanity, and the bathroom is really small, and I want to tear that vanity out and replace it with the original, with a new pedestal sink.
Sure.
Is that something I can do by myself, or do I need to get a contractor?
You know, really, that's something that I think you could do that by yourself. You know, do a little studying on, you know, on plumbing and you know, make sure you know how to shut the water off to that particular spot. You know, usually the only big problem with that is, you know, refinishing the wall again, because the, you know, the pedestal's not hiding all the damage now to the wall from the vanity. You know, is there tile there on the walls or?
Well, the vanity takes up all of the space between the bathtub and the toilet, so I don't really know.
Well, it'll be a good learning curve then for you. You know, those really aren't that bad, because the pedestal sinks are pretty simple to put in. The directions are very good. There's a lot of information on the internet how to do it, and there's a lot of how-to books, too, that have very good diagrams on how to show those. You know, that's I would put that as one of, especially a pedestal sink, as one of the kind of a fun one to do.
Awesome.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You're still going to have the sink there, but that room's going to seem huge after you pull that box out.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they did that in the first place, but I'm eager to replace it.
Maybe you'll find out when you take the cabinet off the wall.
Oh, God.
That's where those critters were living for Dennis.
That's right.
Okay,
right,
thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Alicia, for the call. 866-780-9100. Email from Tom. Oh, it just disappeared. No, there it is. I had my house roofed this week. Well, I have a problem down the road because the plywood was somewhat wet when the weather guard was put down.
I'd keep an eye on it. It depends what product it was. If it was Southern Yellow Pine plywood, really keep your eye on it because, in fact, in some projects, we specified that if Southern Yellow Pine was used as the sheeting, the felt paper had to go on as each course of plywood went on. It seemed you even get a fog on that stuff, and it goes all over the place. If it was oriented strand board, there again, it depends on the quality. Hopefully you won't. Maybe when the sun came out, kind of baked it out. But normally, you know, you try to keep it dry. But in the real world, it's tough to do. I doubt if you are going to have a problem. But just keep an eye on it. And probably one of the first things you would notice is, you know, some humps in the roof where the seams, if there wasn't any space between the seams on the sheeting, that the sheets may expand and they may kind of bump up a little bit. Just keep your eye on it. But if it was just a little bit, you're probably gonna be fine. Most roofers, they have a feeling on how much, and then they quit when it does get too wet.
Joanne is calling from Dubuque this morning. Hello, Joanne.
Hello. I'm calling about a sump pump. After it runs, I have this like thumping noise for a few seconds afterwards.
Sure.
How do I get rid of that? It's kind of annoying.
Well, it depends if there's a back check valve on your sump pump.
Okay.
Sometimes, and I've noticed it on mine every once in a while, I get that thumping noise. It's just kind of the air and the water pressure when the pump shuts off. It uh-huh. depends on how far it pushes it up. And if the water comes back down and makes it thump, thumping noise could be the pipe too. But have a plumber come and take a look at it and your handyman.
Okay.
They should have a back check valve on it. And just make sure that it's not rubbing up against any floor joists. So when it does they always do kind of vibrate when they shut off. So it might just be it leaning against something too.
Okay. All right. Thank you very
much. Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, bye. Joanne. How long does a sump pump last, Bill? Mine's been going for 12 years now. Is that?
Yeah, don't even start that deal. I had a brand new one in there last year. Brand new, not even a sump pump, but a sewage pump, you know. And I paid a lot of money for that, and I bought it at a big box store. I'm not going to say which one it was. Yeah. But when I needed it, it didn't run. I mean, brand new, and it didn't run. So, it can go 12 years, or it can maybe never go. So the one I have now works great.
Okay.
But the other one, that was something that if I'd had the backhoe at home that day, I'd have smashed into little chunks.
I understand.
Gee whiz, I was having such a good day until you brought that up.
I had to bring up that. Chris is next from Des Moines. Hello, Chris.
Hi. We're having some work done on the insulation in our attic, just having that augmented.
Okay.
And one of the contractors suggested that we might improve our ventilation. Is there a rule on the proper amount of ventilation per square foot? And if so, what might that be?
Well, normally it's like 1 to 300. So for every 300 square feet of attic space, you have to have one clear foot of ventilation space. That's what the code calls for. There are instances, some people believe in ventilation, some people don't. But if you're going to build it to code, it's usually 1 to 300. You're playing it safe. Also, there's a 1 to 150 rule, too. So if he's concerned about ventilation, he'll probably go to the 1 to 150. The best ventilation, though, is having it in the overhang and then go out the ridge. It's funny, when I drove here this morning, I really noticed that here in the Iowa City area in Cedar Rapids, the majority of the houses had ridge vent. You go to other parts of the state and they use those little pans, you know, up there on the roof that always get beat up by hail and everything. So they're using really good ventilation tactics in this part of the state.
Okay.
While they're up there, you know, the biggest thing that's going to save you is if wherever the wires come up, up, you know, into the attic through the tops of the walls. If they foam around those and seal those up and seal any place where the warm air is coming from the house into the attic, that's going to make more of a difference on the performance of your attic than the ventilation.
Okay.
Thanks,
Thank
Chris.
You.
Yeah,
yep,
thanks, Chris. Let's try to get one more quick call in. Let's go to Jeff in Southeast Iowa. Good morning, Jeff. Do you have a quick question?
Yes. I live down in Southeast Iowa. Just had a 5-inch rain. Once again, I'm in my basement sucking up water. My question is, what can I do? It's an old limestone basement, 1940s structure. What suggestions for water over the years? I've routed my gutters away from the house. Did the normal procedures, but I still, is this something I will live with continually?
Probably. Yeah, probably. They're really hard to seal. You know, if you really want a dry basement, and I hate to say it, but you're probably going to have to replace them with a poured concrete. But, yeah, it's so hard because, they're porous. They're a very strong basement, but, you know, they weren't really made. When they were designed, they were made for, a root cellar, and that's about it.
Sure.
I feel bad for you. I'm sorry you're having that today.
Well, Jeff, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Good
luck.
Thanks for the
luck.
Call. We're out of time. Bill, it's been great to have you here in the studio.
Thanks.
And hope you can make your way over to this area again.
I'm gonna try to. It's just a lot more fun sitting here with you than it is in my office looking at my stuffed squirrel on the wall.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Does that make you feel good?
Yeah, really. Bill McAnally, Director of the Industrial Technology Program at Iowa Central Community College in Fort Dodge. Our production assistant today was Christoph Mai. Talk of Iowa, a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Dennis Reese. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.